97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Power of the purse resides here, appropriated $246 million for CDC's tobacco prevention programs. Do you commit to following the law again, fully obligating those funds so that we can help adults who want to quit using tobacco and prevent teens from becoming addicted?
Allow me to answer that.
And RFK will answer that question soon. First, I want to introduce you to the entire show. This is Wiggins America. We're going to be talking about a whole lot of stuff this week because it's been a very busy week in politics. Oddly, last week was one of the first weeks since Trump took office that it wasn't super busy. This week has been, and a lot of it's been the overseas trip that Trump took to the Middle East that he's secured so much investment money. We're talking about around $3 to $4 trillion. Now, the proof will be in the pudding, of course, when they actually start spending that money. But some of them are contracts. So, you know, that's already pretty much spent at that point. Anyway, back to this RFK thing. So that clip I just played was from the Representative De La Rosa. I can't remember her first name, but she's elderly-ish and has become famous recently because she has the super far-left liberal look with the dyed pink hair. And she just doesn't seem to read. Doing a great job. You know, a really good representative, when they do these hearings, they already know the answer to the questions when they're asking them, and they don't leave a lot of open-ended. Like, Josh Hawley is unbelievable at that. Ted Cruz is good at that. These are senators, of course, so a lot more House members, and she's just not very good at it. So she was questioning RFK, the head of Health and Human Services, about what's he doing to spend money properly. Basically, I want to make sure you're spending as much money as possible, I guess, is what she was saying. And the hearing wasn't really about any of the DOGE stuff. It was more, I guess it was budget related. But they were asking him, of course, the Democrats were asking him questions about vaccines and how is he handling the actual health of the country, not about the budget. And then he brings it right back to the budget. So you want to hear the answer he gave to her question? Here you go.
Allow me to answer that by pointing out the absolute cataclysmic disorganization of this agency under your oversight for 40 years. We had nine separate offices of women's health. When we consolidate them, the Democrats say we're eliminating them. We're not. We're still appropriating the $3.7 billion, but we're not keeping all nine. We had eight separate offices for minority health. We eliminated one. We had 27 HIV offices.
Okay, let me just, I'm going to
interrupt. We had 59 behavioral health
programs. I'm well over time.
Cataclysmic disorganization is the words he uses at the beginning of that clip, I believe. Cataclysmic is certainly the word he uses for the amount of agencies within his agency that are duplicates. Dozens and dozens, up to 20-something, if it comes to the HIV thing. There were that many agencies doing the same thing. What's funny is I reported on this a while ago, but I haven't heard in detail how many each one of them were until that clip. And I'm like, oh, I gotta play this. There were multiple agencies within the Department of Health and Human Services all literally doing the exact same thing. But it's not just that. Here's how bad it was, and that's not based on just this comment. You know, this comment added numbers to what we already had heard. But I was looking into this, And what he was saying in the past, and I mean by recent past, since he's been in office, is that these agencies not only were duplicates, so unnecessary, but they also would withhold information from each other. So let's say it's the HIV one, and something they do is kind of a discovery of, oh man, look, there's some really interesting information here coming out of Seattle or something. This is very fascinating. We should study this more to see if a lifestyle change involving traffic could affect the way that people live. You know, just whatever, some random study that they paid for, and they discover, oh, there's something interesting here. Maybe we could implement this elsewhere, something like that. Okay, so I just made that up. So they would do the study, and then the other 20 agencies would hear about it and go, ooh, that's interesting. We'd like to hear that too. And the original agency would go, no, that's ours. We're not sharing it with you. Or they would say, yeah, we'll share it with you for a price. And they would charge each other for their own information. They're all the same agency. That's how bad this was and is. And here's the crazy thing. This is stuff that DOGE hasn't even touched yet. So I really believe that we're at the point right now where DOGE is still just scratching the surface. A lot of what they're going to do is kind of in conjunction with the heads of the agencies. So they're not going to go in and find that all these duplicate agencies exist within one agency and say, oh, dear Health and Human Services Director, you should do this. It's the opposite. It's where the Health and Human Services Director, in this case, would see this and go, hey, I need help kind of putting all this together, because the people internally, they have no desire to get rid of all this stuff. Why would you? You're getting rid of your own job security. You're getting rid of your colleagues. So there's very few people within the agencies that will actually do it. So they have to seek out these outside, basically, consultants that are DOGE now to come in and say, okay, here's where we think you could consolidate and save a lot of money. Some of that's tech, but a lot of it is personnel and just bloat. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they're going to be doing, hopefully, for the next 4 years. And by the time we get done with this 4 years, you're going to have a much, much more efficient, slimmer government, hopefully less corrupt. Certainly looks that way as they're uncovering things left and right. But that, to me, that's weird, awful news. And it's also good news, because you have somebody who's finally looking at this. Because, I mean, consider, it's not like they added all these agencies at the end of 2024. And they also, oh my gosh, that was a mistake. This has been this way for a long time. And so the heads of the agencies have just not cared. They just go, oh, okay, there's 14 different agencies all looking at food dye. Are they sharing their information? No, who cares? It's not my money. This has been going on forever. And you finally have somebody who's calling it out. That's great. That's really good news. Like I said, this is going to be a lot of information. One of the random things that I'm going to share with you is a court case about the COVID-19 vaccines that has been completely covered up for a long time. Although it was out there in the news, there was so much news about it at the time that I think it got overlooked. And we're going to revisit that here in Wiggins America. Stick around, big show.
Diapers, babies, because Wiggy Wigs riding dirty. Wiggins America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
If they ever invent invisible motorcycles, that's probably what zombies look like when they're on the toilet, if the toilet was also invisible and could drive around.
The Grocery List, Food for Thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, the pace of government is usually so slow. That's why this is so remarkable, watching Donald Trump in action. Is halfway just because of the pace of things. We talk about this a lot, but It really is amazing. No matter if you like what he's doing or you don't like what he's doing, everybody agrees. This dude's moving fast. I'm not sure he sleeps. I'm not sure how that's possible. I need 7 to 8 hours a night. But that's just me. I couldn't be president because I probably need to sleep too much. But I'm not running for president, so I'm not worried about it. I voted for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the president. He's getting a ton of stuff done. I have been in the business world a little bit. Nothing like Trump, but I have tried. I mean, I have a business currently, trying to do some business stuff. It's amazing. The more I try to do in business, the more I realize the government really is there to... They typically just slow you down. And that is the difference between private business and government. The key reason that happens, in my opinion, is that government really is not accountable to their money. So they're going to get their money one way or another. If they start to lose money, it's a very gradual, slow thing where you don't see the direct relationship between your actions and the income that you're getting. And so even though there are some very, very good people in government, and I'm just talking about the federal level, I'm talking about the state level, the county level, the city level, on down as small as you can get, if your income is not directly tied to what you do, it's harder to motivate yourself to move faster. And that's the difference. So business, you are definitely on the clock. If you lose a day, you lost a paycheck. You know, that's the way it is. And so you got to move fast. Government does not have to move fast. And so when business and government kind of clash and you have to try to get things done quickly as a business owner, government can be frustrating, even when you're dealing with great people. I'm going to do a little time travel here. Normally, when we do Today in Time Travel, we travel back to maybe this day in history, last year or 5 years ago or whatever. This one is actually just a couple months ago, but it highlights this point so well. And it's two people who are not conservatives. They are definitely not Trump fans. This is Ezra Klein. And I believe his credentials are that he's a writer. He's an NPR kind of guy and influencer in that sense. And then Jon Stewart, both of whom not Trump people. But this is, you might remember this, Ezra Klein talking to Jon Stewart on his podcast about broadband, just a basic government thing that the Biden administration was trying to do as part of the infrastructure bill that they were so proud of. And here's how it went.
Today in time travel.
We have to issue the notice of funding opportunity within 180 days. That's step one. Step two, which all 56 state applicants completed, is states who want to participate must submit a letter of intent. After they do that, they can submit a request for up to $5 million in planning grants. Then the NTIA, step four, has to review and approve and award, again, planning grants, not broadband grants, planning grants.
And it's still at the NTIA. It's still at the first step.
All right, so the NTIA must issue a NOFO within 180 days. States who want to participate must submit their letter of intent. Step three, they can request up to $5 million in planning grants.
Just planning.
Step four, the requests are reviewed, approved, and awarded by the NTIA.
Oh, you thought that was the end of the clip, didn't you? Because that's obviously just government inaction. It's malfeasance, but it's also typical. It's very much the way government usually operates. Slow, slow, slow. That's not even the end of that story, though.
Which currently all 56, you know, 3 years later, all 56 applicants had passed through at least step five. It took more than 3 years. So it's a long time. States must submit a five-year action plan. So the states kind of go back and they kind of think about how they're going to do this. And they don't just say, okay, you know, thank you for the money. We're going to spend it and you can see how it worked out later. We're like, here's our five-year action plan. Then the FCC must publish the broadband data maps before NTIA allocates funds. So having done the NOFO, the letters of intent, the request for planning grants, then the review, approval, and awarding of the planning grants, then the five-year action plans. In between that, the federal government has to put forward a map saying where it thinks we need rural broadband subsidies. And then, of course, the states need an opportunity to challenge the map for accuracy. And you can imagine this doesn't all happen in like a day.
This isn't out of the ordinary. I mean, this is one story. This is crazy. But the fact that it's two Democrats talking about it is good, because everybody has to acknowledge that this is a problem. When you're trying to get anything done, whether it be broadband or anything else, like I started the segment talking about, if you're trying to do business and you got to do stuff with the government, a lot of times it just takes too long. And that discourages business, and that discourages communities. And I'm not even complaining about my personal situation. I'm just saying that's typical. That's the way it usually goes. So I played this back because, again, it is two Democrats, and I like that they're acknowledging how bad government usually is. Unless you're giving money to your NGO friends, that happens usually pretty fast. Government is very, very slow. That's the difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, really Donald Trump and almost every other president, because Republican presidents, this isn't a red-blue thing necessarily, although it skews that way a bit. Republican presidents do try to get things done. Democrats try to get things done. The difference is that Republicans try to do things that limit government typically a little bit, and Democrats try to grow it, and they use the power of government to get things done. Trump is really unique in that he uses the power of government to limit the power of government and get things done that otherwise just don't. And a lot of times he is the guy who's walking into the room and just sort of firing a shot and going, anybody paying attention yet? And he just kind of sees what works. You know, this latest executive order with the drug companies, will that legally stick? I don't know. It seems like there's going to be more that Congress would have to get involved in to actually make that work. But he just walks into a room and just fires a flare gun, you know, and goes, this is the way it is now. And then everybody got to kind of scramble to deal with the flare that's lighting things on fire in the trash can in the corner. It may not end up being something, but you still have to deal with it. And if you're in those industries, you have been put on notice for sure. That's the difference. He's a businessman. He moves fast. He gets frustrated by government, even though he's in it. Whereas Joe Biden, for the last 4 years, you saw everything was like molasses for the business community, for growth. I mean, the one thing that definitely did grow is all the prices. And by the way, little tidbit here, April was the first time prices of food and groceries have dropped since November of 2020. That was during Trump's first term, which means that there were zero price drops for groceries overall. The inflationary number would go up and down, but this is the first time you actually saw deflation, slight deflation in grocery prices in April of this year since Trump's first term. But Trump works fast. I was thinking about it this weekend. I would liken it to 20 years ago, little community. You know, you had a nice small town. Everybody knew each other for the most part. Or you knew that old Joe was kind of a drunk, and you knew that this woman was having trouble with her husband and this and that. So-and-so's got cancer. It's not that everything was perfect, but everybody kind of knew each other and, you know, was at least pulling in the same direction generally. And then you had somebody move into the corner house, and they were a little skeezy. They were outside the community. You weren't really sure what their goal was. And everybody suspected they were maybe doing some drugs in there. But nobody was really sure. They kind of kept to themselves. So the community was kind of rallying and saying, we need to check this out. But the mayor was like, nah. Individual, right? We can't just bust in there, you know. Nothing's really wrong, but we know something's up, but nothing's really wrong. Then after that 4 years of that mayor, another mayor comes along, and everybody's like, okay, look, we know for sure that place is run down now. It's a drug den. We know it for sure. We don't have video evidence, but people are coming and going all hours of the night. We can see that it's happening. Please do something about this. And the guy goes, nah, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just not going to do anything. So they elect a new mayor 4 years later. New mayor goes, yeah, I think I'm going to try to do something. But he got caught all up in red tape. He's like, well, we can't just bust into the house. You know, we got to go through a process and get a warrant, and we got to go through, and then they do, and then they go in there, but it's taken 6 months, and they finally go in the house, and they see that, oh, well, I actually couldn't find any drugs because they had 6 months to hide them. Well, I guess we tried everything we could, and they let it go. And then they elect a new guy whose promise was, well, we're going to go in there, and we're going to change things. We're going to stop things. And they got caught up. Finally, they elect a new guy 4 years later after all these people, four years, who is super bold. And he says, we're absolutely going to deal with this. And he's got creative solutions to do it. And he just starts sending the police in. And they go, wait a minute, that's not even legal. You go, wait a minute, I don't know. And he's going, is it legal or is it legal? And he's really testing the boundaries of what even government can do. You know, this new mayor. But at the center of it, he's getting rid of a drug den. You know what I mean? It's been plaguing the community. It's made everything bad. You got drugs all over your community now. And it's because of bureaucratic red tape that they never really could get rid of this corner house. And now the new guy is just issuing warrants and signing stuff left and right and saying, yeah, go get these people. The minute they walk out of their house, if you see them do anything wrong, you see them jaywalking, arrest them. You know, he's using the extent of the law to go after what is actually a deeper problem. And so when you criticize the method of the new mayor saying, yeah, I don't love that he's doing it this way. You know, that's really testing the limits of law. Agreed. He really is kind of testing the limits. Not that he's doing anything illegal, but he's pushing the boundaries of what law is and what it's been used for. Because of the central problem, there is a drug den in town and it is ruining our community. That's the difference between Donald Trump and other politicians. Yes, he's a businessman. We talked about the pace, of course, but it's that he focuses on the problem first and then says, I'm going to fix this problem by any means necessary. And then sometimes he gets slapped down and they say, you can't do it that way. And he goes, okay, well, then I'll try another way. That's a huge difference of vision and philosophy for a leader than what we've had. And it's interesting to live in this time when you have somebody finally saying, that's a problem, we have to deal with it, and focusing on the problem instead of the method. The method matters. But the problem is more important. So we do have to follow the law. We have to follow the Constitution. But I like where his head's at. I like that he's focusing on the problems.
You had previously said that you thought that you would have won. Since then, Donald Trump won all the battleground states and made inroads with almost every major demographic, from working class voters to Hispanic men to black men. Knowing what you know now, do you think you would have beat him?
Yeah, he's still got 7 million fewer votes.
Yes.
There you go. Okay. A lot of people didn't show up. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, they're very close in those toss-up states. It was it wasn't a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. And every time I've been on the show, which I've been fortunate to be on more than once. Thanks for having me. Is that we talk, you guys don't focus on as much, and I think it's good, on polling numbers. But let me put it this way. He's had the worst 100 days any president's ever had.
Yeah, that's a fact, yeah.
Joe Biden says he's fine, so I assume we should just trust him. He didn't win. And so he's out there trying to make a little money is what I've heard, is that all of his speaking money and stuff, that normally a former president gets a lot of money to come and speak at events, and he's not getting any, or it's few and far between. So he's trying to gin up a little bit of money for the family. All of that, all the ways that they used to make money no longer matter and no longer are relevant, because they are irrelevant now. They do not have power. They do not have the potential for power either. All right. I'm going to read this article because it's making the news. But Jake Tapper put out a book. Jake Tapper gets a lot of heat, as he should. He is extremely partisan, but he does have little nuggets like this.
So you're part of the 23% of adults who are not concerned about the president's ability to be president because of his age and stamina. I got it.
That's but, because you got to do is watch
but
him.
77%, watch him. But 77% of adults are worried. Joe Biden's been in politics since before, literally since before you were born. He's aged. I'm not saying he's not able to walk.
But you're talking about his strength, right? You're talking about how he's looking right now.
I think the average American male only lives to be 77 or something.
I've had conversations with some of your colleagues in the White House press corps when we travel abroad, how it is hard for us to keep up with this president who is constantly working every day to get things done.
So while he takes a lot of heat for being a partisan journalist hack like the rest of them on CNN, he does have little nuggets that you can find of him pressing the establishment.
Today we saw this rare look inside these facilities. Since the Biden administration has not granted news media access to the facilities, citing COVID restrictions, despite the president's promise in his inaugural address to always level with you. Blocking access to the news media is not leveling with the American people, Mr. President.
The trouble with those things is that they're so few and far between. Yes, they exist, but the reason they get pulled and remembered is because they were rare. They're subscription services and clips and things that you can, that you can be a part of, where you go and find clips of somebody saying something about a certain topic. And you can find Jake Tapper criticizing Biden or the establishment or whatever you want. Somewhat. Those clips do exist. The problem is, if you were just watching him on CNN, he didn't do it much. So it's funny now that he comes out with this book about how the media was covering up Biden's decline. He was completely a part of that. I mean, once in a while, like those clips I played, yeah, he'd drop a stone. But it was rare. It was very rare. But I'll give him credit for at least saying it. But from that book, I guess for whatever reason, a new quote is making the circulations now. David Plouffe, a top advisor to former Vice President Harris's 2024 campaign, describes the race against President Trump as a blanking nightmare. The pundit cast blame on former President Biden for his late stage decision to withdraw from the race, according to a new book set to be released this week. Quote, he totally effed us, Plouffe said in Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again by Jake Tapper. We all remember what happened. This is to rewrite these things. Is comical. But the thing is, we all expected it to be rewritten too. The minute somebody loses, everybody goes, here's what was really going on. They won't admit it during the campaign, but we all saw it. I mean, you can't get more public than the way that thing happened from everything, from the debate to the sudden turn of the media on Biden. I mean, they really did. At that moment, they go, this guy can't win. Let's turn. Let's attack him. And then they want a credit for, not covering up the truth. I'm going to write a book about it. I'm going to sell a whole bunch of copies of it. So that's what this is. But it's really comical to me that we're even having to rehash these things, because it wasn't behind closed doors. This was all out in the open and is very much a part of the collective memory of the country at this point. And so for them to try to rewrite that, it's go ahead. You can try all you want. You think you control the narrative, but you don't. Today's Tales from the Dark Side, though, does visit something from the past that I think we should talk about a little bit more.
There is, unseen by most, an underworld. A place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
Here is the difference between that administration, the Biden-Harris administration, and the current Trump administration. Because it's not just the person at the top. It's everybody that he has working for him. In the case of Biden, He had people at the FDA. You remember the Health and Human Services Director was a trans guy. Well, now it's Robert Kennedy Jr. And things are different. I mean, there is no stone being unturned by these agencies. You can criticize the DOJ for not moving as fast as you want or whatever. That's fine. That's all fair. But they're all moving pretty, pretty darn fast. And they are not any respecters of people or companies. The HHS, I mean, the drug law this week. Trump's going after Big Pharma. I love it. I love it. I don't know if it'll work, but I love it. This is the story, though, from the tale from the dark side that I wanted to bring up that got almost no attention. I was digging through some files, and I found this the other day. I said, wow, I really need to re-report on that. This is Biden's FDA. Biden's FDA, and it doesn't say Biden's because this was written at the time of the FDA. This is from 2021, November 17th, 2021. The FDA asks federal judge to grant it until the year 2076 to fully release Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine data. That's the FDA asking a judge to hide the data from the COVID-19 vaccines. The government shields Pfizer from liability, gives billions of dollars to it. Now, it's all a big circle, of course. Makes Americans take its product, but it won't let you see the data supporting its safety and efficacy. Who does the government work for? This is a great article, but you get the point that the FDA was in bed with Big Pharma. So that's why the news this week of Trump signing that executive order to go right at their throat. I mean, we really do subsidize the creation of medicines for the entire world. And it's gross that we do that. The benefit that we've been told is that, well, yes, but you get them first. You might be paying 75% of all the America might be paying 75% of all drug costs, and the rest of the entire world might be taking that same drug and paying only 25%, but you get it first. But that's not even true anymore. That might have been true decades ago. But now a drug gets approved and then it immediately goes everywhere. Do you think they're like, oh, we'll sit on this for 3 years, make sure that Americans get it? Of course they don't. They take it everywhere. And so we really are subsidizing not the manufacturer, like we need to actually make more stuff here, but the research and development of all drugs of the world happens here. And then we pay for it, and we pay deeply out of pocket. Our whole system is so jacked up. You know that because you've probably tried to get insurance to cover something before, and you've seen how hard that is. But we're at the point where insurance dictates to doctors what they can prescribe. I mean, it's so, so messed up. And I'm not going to say it's just Obamacare. I'm not going to say it's just one thing or another. But the whole system has been propped up. And Obamacare is a part of that because they just funneled a bunch of government money into that system and said, yeah, let's just keep it the way it is. That's not compassion. That is cronyism. And Trump, FDR, RFK, the whole team, they're going after this stuff. And that's good news. It's good news for consumers. We'll see how it plays out. I think I encourage critical thinking on this show. Wait till you hear what I do in this segment and you'll go, no, that's stupid. But hopefully when you hear something like this, your initial reaction is probably, oh man, our side lost. So Trump and his budget proposal lost this week. Actually, as of yesterday, it was breaking news. But when you hear why, then you go, oh wait, actually that's pretty good. Unless you're just for Trump. So I get that we take in a lot of news, and a lot of it you just go, tell me which side's saying what so I can make up my mind, because I don't even know what's happening. And you go, oh, there's an R on it? Okay, that's my side. Then whatever they're doing, I support that. There's a D on it, I'm against that. Or vice versa, depending on where you are. Right, I get that. That's a shorthand way of doing it. But that's hopefully why you tune in to talk radio or you read and you find out more about this stuff when you have time, because there's more to it. So in this case, that is what's going on. It's the GOP fiscal hawks in Congress, specifically the House, that have sunk the big, beautiful bill for now. It doesn't mean it's not going to pass, But fiscal hawks, this was breaking yesterday morning, fiscal hawks on the House Budget Committee on Friday, they didn't even get it to the full vote. They didn't even get it out of committee. I actually think this is good. They sunk a key vote on advancing the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, that's what they're calling it, that encompasses President Trump's legislative agenda, marking a stunning setback for the legislation. This is from The Hill, so of course they're going to report on it like it's great that he lost. But that's not really what's going on. A 16-21 vote throws up a hurdle for leaders hoping to send the bill to Senate by Memorial Day. That's probably not going to happen now. I'm saying July 4th is still the date, in my opinion. But are still haggling over last-minute changes to appease not only the fiscal hawks mainly, but also moderates seeking bigger blue state tax breaks. And these are Republicans, of course, still in blue states, of which I am. I'm in Illinois. But when you dig into this a little bit more, you find out that actually what's going on is that the GOP fiscal hawks, which are screaming loud and saying, look, this is a huge chance for us to actually balance a budget. Whether they get there or not, I don't know, but they're trying to, and I really appreciate that. Cast it all aside and do it. I get that you have to pass the legislative agenda for Trump, and you do. You really do have to do that. But find a way to do it while also cutting spending. Listen to this story also from The Hill. Republican leaders intend to accelerate new work requirements under Medicaid as they scramble to secure the support of GOP holdouts for President Trump's big, beautiful bill. One of those voices that I follow very, very closely is Chip Roy. There's several others right now that are throwing roadblocks on this, but here's Chip Roy.
That video, shared thousands of times on Instagram, shows a woman identified Thursday as Christina Salometto walking to another woman's car. The 44-year-old sits on the hood, or not showing the most graphic part of the video, including when she appeared to defecate on the car.
Ah, dang it. That's another clip from that story from last week about that lady jumping up on the hood of a car during a road rage incident and taking a dump on it. I apologize. That wasn't Chip Roy. Again, this is where you come for news. This is the facts. Ethan, why did you put that? You mislabeled that. It's your fault. Anyway, back to Chip Roy. What he's saying is that that they're doing swampy math again, where they're like, yes, this will save money starting in like 2029. He goes, we always do this stupid crap. Sorry. I didn't mean to bring crap into the conversation. I keep doing that. I think we got the Chip Roy clip now. Ethan, can you play the Chip Roy?
To be able to poop on a car like that was impressive, but it was disgusting at the same sense.
Crazy.
Can you please check those before? Anyway, the GOP fiscal hawks are actually doing meaningful reform to all of this ridiculous spending, and that's good news. We'll end on that.
Get more at 971talk.com.